Hello, everybody. Thanks for joining us, continuing on the live coverage of the .NET conference. My name is Tim Heuer. I'm here to talk to you today about XAML. My colleague Larry was here earlier talking a little bit about it, and so I'm here to kind of continue along, talking a little bit more, a little bit deeper dive into some of the controls and the tools that we've done around XAML. So since this was a .NET conference, I appropriately wore my C# shirt today. My daughter thinks this is a Twitter shirt, and she wants to know why the hashtag is in the wrong spot, but she'll learn soon enough. So I'm one of the program managers on the developer platform for Windows, and that brings along with it the XAML UI platform. That's what we're here to talk about today. One of the things I want to kind of set the stage is that in the phone platform, we also updated the phone platform to include some updates to Silverlight and Silverlight 8.1 is what we're calling it. Specifically, this session will not be covering any of those platform changes for Silverlight. However, a lot of the things that I'll talk about today do have analogs to Silverlight, and you'll always find those in the Silverlight toolkit, the phone toolkit, which you can find at phone.codeplex.com, which is an open source project. Feel free to grab it and use it. There's a NuGet package. You can just consume it if you want to do that as well. But a lot of things we'll talk about are still available to Silverlight developers via the phone toolkit today. Here's an example of some of the things that I'll talk about, and so some of the analogs that exist in the Silverlight toolkit versus what we're talking about in WinRT XAML, which is what this session will be focused about today, and specifically on the mobile platform as well as in tooling, what we've done to encompass collectively what you can do in XAML, what tooling we've enhanced for diagnosis and better designability of XAML, et cetera. So with that, let's get started and dive right in. I got a lot of things I want to show you today. So first, let's talk about some new controls. One of the things that Larry mentioned earlier was talking about the universal platform. And when we talk about the universal Windows platform, being able to write one set of code that can scale across a small screen to a large screen device across the same set of API on top of the same platform fundamentals. We took that to the UI platform as well, and we wanted to make sure that we're starting to deliver controls that adapt to those areas. So if you're a Windows Phone developer, you may have been used the panorama control before. One of the things that we've introduced is the hub control in WinRT, and it's very, very similar to the panorama control. In fact, it's almost identical. So I have these video examples here that I'll show you. I'm just going to let them play just so you can get an idea of what the experience is for the hub control. So hub control is the same control on Windows and Windows Phone, and it's kind of that one control that allows you to have sections of content that are separated. Again, very similar to the panorama experience. It has that experience that allows you to kind of pan content, and the headers will stick to the positions with good snap points, et cetera. On phone, this is has been redesigned above panorama to make the content a little bit more front and center. So the typography has changed a little bit to give your content, your app experience, more priority than anything like the headers or the labels above those sections as well. So subtle changes, but good changes for you, the app developer, to make your experiences great using this. We've also added the capability to include this optional kind of hero image, that the kind of big image in the front. Now, when using on the phone platform, the image is kind of what you want to use is actually the background image, right? So you have this panoramic background image that kind of stays as you're panning the content. And that's still supported, and you can use the hero image that way or as an initial section here. Now, the other thing that we did in the hub control is we wanted to make sure that it was most performant as possible. And we want to make sure that as the sections that you have loading, are efficient to the user who may be on a low-powered machine versus who may be on a high-powered machine. We want to make sure that that person who's on the low-powered machine has a great app experience as well. So what we do is we introduce the sections using data templates. Now, it changes the programming model a little bit. Specifically, as I call out in this presentation, you don't have the capability of using an XName value, so a unique ID on each section. But instead, we're using the data template approach, which gives you automatic deferred loading of each one of those individual sections. And we recommend that each one of your sections actually become a user control, and that way you can use XName elements within that and program it against them as well. And I'll be showing demos, actual demos throughout this as well after I go through some overviews here. The second thing that we've introduced is a list view. So for those of you who have had are familiar with the long list selector capabilities, the list view is kind of the replacement for the long list selector. So it has the same API coverage for the Universal Windows platform and adds some more capabilities such as reorder and some new animations as well. So this is the control that you see in the Inbox Mail app. So when you're looking through your inbox and all the mail lists that exist there. So when you get to, when you turn on multi-select mode and being able to have those checkboxes, we enable you to be able to build those experiences as well. Some other subtle things that we've added that developers have asked for is being able to have a footer below the content, so not be able to have content at the top, but knowing where the content is going to have the scroll region, but also have a footer content at the end. And then a feature for, like, if you have timeline-based information, you know, a canonical example we use is Twitter, where you have a list of things that are kind of timeline-based, and the user may be scrolling up and down, and you kind of want to maintain their position where they last were in the list. So we've added capability to remember that position. We call that the Maintain Viewport API. In addition, on list now, we support grouping. And as I mentioned, this is kind of the jump list replacement, or the long list selector replacement. And so with the combination of grouping and implementing semantic zoom, which is a new control available to phone developers, that combination on top of list view gives you that long list selector, that jump list capabilities that you see in things like the People app and actually the All Apps view on the phone itself. And then additionally, when you have content that is a long list of things, we now support incremental loading capabilities through the native API. So you can know when the edge of the list is about to be hit and load more data. So you don't have to load a million rows up at front. You can only load what you know the user needs to see. And as they scroll more, you can go ahead and get more information. The other control to display large sets of information is grid view. So if you want to produce kind of things like the a photo album layout, grid view is a great control to be able to use these things. And it basically kind of lays things out exactly what the control sounds like in a grid and provides a selection model and invoke model and things like that. Now on the phone, the grid view will scroll vertically versus on desktop Windows, it will scroll horizontally and vertically depending on the property that you select there. So let's take a look at some of these controls in practice. And what I'd like to do is start out by kind of talking, extending just a little refresher of what Larry had demonstrated about Universal Apps. So I have this app right here, and let's kind of look at it on the desktop experience here. And you can see that I have this app here. I've got this hero image you can see here. And as I scroll, I have these other sections. So this is what we're seeing as an example of the hub control as viewed on the desktop. So it's a very simple kind of Metro design. Now what I'm going to do is I want to create a phone view of that. And the tools allow me to, let me do that again, just right-clicked on my project and added a phone project. And so this dialog is basically telling me, hey, I'm going to create a project for you, and I'm going to create this thing called a shared project for you. And we can see those now in the IDE here. And so what it's done is it's created a phone-specific build target for me, as well as a shared target. And anything that I put in the shared target gets compiled to both apps or multiple apps, if I have them on here, that I build in this solution. So what I want to do now is move a bunch of my shared code, and I'm kind of quickly going over this. I encourage you to go back and look at the sessions earlier today in the .NET conference, and Larry Lieberman had a session talking about the Universal App Platform and some of these examples here. So I'm intentionally kind of going through these a little bit quicker. But I'm going to go ahead and move this content to the shared project, and so I basically have pretty much nothing in my Windows project other than kind of manifest information at this point. And since I already have an app XAML and a main page XAML, I'm going to delete those from my phone project. And let's go ahead now and run this in the phone view. Now, one of the things I want to point out is one of the first new tooling features that we enabled was being able to more easily set your startup project. And so before you kind of had to right click, set a startup. Now, where most people either hit F5 or if you're a mouse keyboard user, you kind of hit this run button. So we've added a drop down here so you can specifically change the startup through that. So I'm just going ahead and change it to Windows Phone. I'm going to choose the default emulator, which is the 512 emulator, and run the application. Now we see that I'm getting some build errors. It's because I forgot to add my JSON.NET reference to the phone-specific project. So I can go ahead and do that now. And with the benefit of portable class libraries, this is a C# XAML project. With the benefit of portable class libraries, I'm able to reuse the same component that JSON.NET has provided to the desktop, the web, et cetera, in my mobile application here. So I'll resolve that reference, and now we'll run this application again. So here we see the phone emulator now running. And as we see it, this is the same. Now remember, I didn't change any code yet. I just moved moved all the code to the shared. So now the same app is running here. And you can see that I have this panorama experience, this time not the hero image, but more of the background image with some content here. And as I scroll past, I have these individual hub sections or panorama. Now the interesting thing is that the hub control, as an example here, adapts to its environment. So as I get to the end of the list, you can see that it wraps around. And this is the beginning. If I go back, you can see that it starts at the end of the list. So this is an example of how the hub control itself is adapting to the smaller screen and the behaviors there versus what the current behavior is on the desktop. Now, the other thing that we talked about was using list view. So here's an example of, I don't have a lot of content here, so this isn't a long list, doesn't have a need for a long list. But this is an example of just showing the list view and how you can format that. Similarly here, this is actually a grid view. So if you remember in the desktop experience, it actually laid it out a little bit horizontally in a wrapping manner versus on the phone. This is showing in a more vertical area here. And this is also, again, another templated list view. So with the hub, I mentioned that one of the best practices is to kind of use user controls for your section. So in our project, we had, let's go ahead and open up the hub page here. And we have a couple sections here. So we have, here's our hub control right here. And we have the header information. And then we have several sections. So the first section, we kind of had a cover story. We had that points table. And I think we have a third one here that had, points table. I think actually I only did two of them as user controls here. But you can see that the section content is basically just a user control. Now, the benefit of using this method is that I can share the code because the code actually becomes a partial class, right, in these user controls, and I can have a different view that's tailored for each specific endpoint. So I'm going to first just move these back to the desktop view. And so now I need to have, so now I have those controls available for my desktop view. And what I need to do now is make sure that I have those same views available for my mobile experience because I've taken them out of the shared experience. So I have some of these pre-canned. I don't want to spend a lot of time here doing these. So I'm going to move these actually to my phone view here. Just drag them from Explorer. And these are the same user controls. So I have cover story, leaderboard, points table. Those are the same XAML. Different XAML, but same classes. You can see that because they're partial classes, that allows me to do some, if I needed to do some specific things within the control, I can do that. But I didn't have to change my hub page at all. So, I'm just referencing that user control. And so by doing that, I can refactor things out, use them in my user control, have code that actually, does some things that are specific within there. Here's working with the status bar, et cetera, on the phone versus, I don't believe I have that, any code here on the desktop as an example. So now when we run this on the mobile experience view, we should get a subtly changed but different view here. So you can see the cover page has changed. I changed the table view here. To just show the number of wins versus some other data. And as we drill in deeper, we kind of make use of the device form factor. We switch to orientation. We kind of show the bigger view of the perspective there. But that's a quick walkthrough of the hub. So the hub is very similar to Panorama. Hubs are made up of headers and sections have content. And we recommend using user controls to kind of show that content. The other thing that we quickly showed was kind of lists. And let me take a break and talk about the performance of showing large sets of data. I mentioned that the replacement we have for the long list selector or jump list kind of behavior is the list view plus semantic zoom, as the combination of those can kind of give you that behavior. Now, what if you just have a single list and you want to, you know, show a ton of data? Now, obviously, you don't want to kind of do a select star from table and just show everything in the world to your users. So you want to do it in a most performant way. Now, one of the things that we've added is we want to deliver the best kind of panning experience from that performance can have, because, you know, lists usually have a bunch of data. Datas have a certain view that they want, so you apply a template to them. So as you kind of if you look at this screen here, what I'm trying to demonstrate is the orange rectangle is basically the viewport that the user is going to see. So as they pan content, we're going to realize more content within that viewport. And now how we do virtualization is we take the viewport plus kind of what's on the left and the right to make sure that those are ready, anticipating the panning experience for the user. Now, when you have grouping involved, we actually used to not be able to virtualize groups. So once, you know, you kind of had any portion of group 2 in the viewport, all of it was realized, and that could cause some issues. What we've now updated to is that we actually treat them a little bit more flatter. So you can see that in this screen here, how we're showing that we no longer just realize from a group level, we actually realize at the individual item level, so we didn't have to realize group N or group 1, and that saves some performance and memory cost on the experience. Now, the other thing that we've enabled is we want to make sure that as your users are panning their list, whether they're vertical or horizontal, that they don't get to what we call panda black. So if somebody's doing kind of a fast flick action, we don't want them to see blank space. It's not a good user experience. And so we don't know what your data template is. You may have a bajillion things in there. You may only have an image. So we wanted to create an extensible way for you to kind of create the best experience. And so we introduced a phasing approach with regard to lists. So as the user is panning, there's some UI thread work going to happen. Then we start rendering items. Then we continue to render each item, et cetera, et cetera. Now, there's a couple things we've done. So you can increase users' perceived performance by simply turning on placeholders. So you can see on the left-hand side where you have the kind of panda black experience, which provides a poor user experience to your customers because they think something's wrong or something's, you know, blank and there's no data there. Or you have a placeholder experience, which this is the, you know, you turn on one Boolean flag and we give this for you. And this kind of gives the user like, hey, there's some context here, there's more data coming. I'm just going to show you some generic placeholders, and these are just gray boxes. Now you can take that a step further and create your phasing approach so you can incrementally update those placeholders, basically. Kind of think of them as custom placeholders. So you can see here we have a data template that shows a background image, the title, and the subtitle. And so maybe we don't need to show all those at once, especially when fast panning is happening. We can phase each one of those things individually. So here's an example that as they get realized, like maybe we only need to recognize the text because somebody may be panning and they don't need to see that album art yet until it comes to a rest state. So what we do now is we allow you to do this through phasing. So we're going to do our normal UI thread work here, and then we allow you to kind of have these phasing callback mechanisms. And so you can say in phase 0, I want you to show this background brush, this green color. Now in phase 1, in phase 0, and when you're done, call me back if you're still here, if that item is still on view. And in phase 1, now go ahead and show the item text. And in phase 2, now show the subtitle. And now if, you know, I continue to move off the screen and now I'm panning more, we continue to iterate that as more things come on the screen. And then phase 3, we apply that background image. Now what this allows you to do is that as things have panned off screen, if they didn't need to get to phase 3, you just saved a bunch of time not rendering UI elements on the screen that didn't need to because the user would have never seen them. And a lot of people ask, like, you know, is this, are these changes like beneficial? And so we through the new list view and grid view controls, we added this phasing approach, but we also added some new capabilities, which are default, so you don't have to think about them unless you're customizing the list view container. And we kind of use some test apps in developing these, and I like to show these videos because it kind of shows a good before and after perspective of the work that we've done. And these are real speed videos, so they're not under a high-speed camera or anything like that. So this first one is talking about the startup. So as I play this, you'll see that this is kind of a before and after shot, before and after perspective of the list view defaults that we've had. So let me go ahead and play this. It's the same app, basically using two different views. You can see the one on the left starts up significantly faster and realizes more items more quickly. So again, the user experience is improved. Now let's talk about that phasing approach. And so this video here shows that phasing approach. And so one is just using a typical grid view with a data template that has uses binding, and the other one uses the phasing approach. And you can see the significant difference in the user experience, where as someone starts panning, on the left side of the video, you can see that they've quickly got to black. You know, so as a user, is something wrong with the application? I don't know. Is it hung? Did something break? Is my internet connection down? Et cetera. You know, it's a bad experience, but using the phasing approach, you can see provides a significantly better user experience. So the event that we do in the list view base, which surfaces up through grid view and list view, is called the container content changing. And that's what gives you that phasing approach. And so the arguments that it's, you know, basically an event handler based thing. We'll talk about behaviors in a little bit, but there actually is a blend SDK, a behaviors SDK behavior for this that you can wire up the phasing and in markup, and basically wires up this code for you. So the args allow you to determine the phase, what to do in the phase, and register a callback when that phase is complete. I see a question. Let me pause real quick and take a look at this question. I forgot to, yes, thank you for the viewers online. If you are watching online, feel free to submit questions, and we'll do our best to answer them. I guess I don't know why I'm saying our, it's just me. So I'll do my best to answer them real time for you. So Hisham asks a question, any plans to support the XAML debugging feature which we've had in Silverlight? So Hisham is referring to, in Silverlight 5, we introduced XAML breakpoint debugging. Really, we only introduced it for the case of binding. So you could set a breakpoint on a binding, and as that binding was being evaluated, kind of see that binding expression. We currently don't have plans to introduce the markup breakpoint debugging right now, but we are looking at ways that we can still deliver a better binding debugging experience without having to worry about actually setting a breakpoint in binding. So nothing specifically to show today, but hopefully in future previews of the platform, we'll be able to demonstrate that for you. The mechanism that Silverlight uses is based on reflection emit, which is not a native concept. It's very much a managed framework concept and not part of the .NET framework core, which the WinRT profile uses. So it's actually just not a consistent way for us to do it across the managed and native platforms in the WinRT world. So that's the main reason, initial main reason why we didn't bring that across. But good question. You should see some future improvements there of being able to debug binding in the WinRT platform in the future. Okay, let's talk about, continuing on, talking about new features in the phone here. So the other thing we've added is the capability of theming. So first and foremost, high contrast themes are built in to all the controls. So if your users are changing the settings and turning on high contrast, the controls, as long as you haven't, you know, destroyed them in your control retemplating, automatically have high contrast colors turned on. So as the user selects their high contrast profile, the controls will automatically update. The accent color that the user chooses is also exposed for you to be able to use. So this is one thing that actually won't show up in IntelliSense, but is usable for developers. And we call that the system color control accent brush and color. So you can use this if you want to say, hey, I want to use the user's accent color in some other control. And we have an example of this on the slide that you're looking at here, where the button is using the accent color that the user chose. Now, on the phone as well, the user can choose whether they prefer a light or dark theme. and all the controls built in will automatically react that. It's one of our kind of user interface guidelines, is that you should kind of do your best to honor themes. But there are situations where apps, you know, want to tailor a specific experience, and regardless of the user's theme, they want to make sure that they're always in light or always in dark. And so we allow you to request, we call it a requested theme. And you can say, hey, I want my app to be always light or always dark. The reason why we call it requested theme is because high contrast will always overrule. You know, if you have an accessible needs user and they've specified they want high contrast, those settings are always going to be honored. So when you say, hey, I want my app to always be in light theme, but if the user has specified high contrast, you know, that will override your light theme request. Any of the changes that you make or that the user makes are updatable on resume of the app and restart of the app as well. So theming capability is more flexible now in WinRT XAML for the phone. Some other simpler features we've added in the controls is on pretty much every kind of input type control, like, you know, text input, combo boxes, progress bars, toggle switches, radio buttons, etc. We have added a header capability. So if you're building kind of like a forms-based environment, you can simply show us a simple header. It is a content control, so you can put more than just text there. But if all you needed to put was text, you can certainly do that. So no need to use a second text block. In addition to that, we actually already have that built into the control. For additional text input areas, such as like password box and text box, we have now the placeholder text. A lot of people call that watermark. But we have placeholder text natively supported in those controls, and that will automatically disappear as the user types. And these are supported on things like I mentioned, text box, rich text box, combo box, etc. And in fact, yes, placeholder text is supported on combo boxes as well. Flyouts is a new concept to Windows Phone, and this is part of our kind of converging to that universal Windows platform. So all the flyouts are what we call light dismiss, so they're kind of this light pop-up layer, and as the user kind of taps away from those experiences, they will just dismiss. There's no forcible dismiss mode there. An example of where flyouts are used is a context menu. So in Silverlight, you had a context menu, and in Windows Phone 8.1, the menu flyout is what you want to use as the replacement there, and that actually is a flyout layer. It's a specific type of flyout. So you can think of flyout as the primitive, and menu flyout gives you the capability to show menus there. Some other examples of flyouts that exist, but that you as a developer don't necessarily need to worry about, are some of the areas around lists. So whenever you do a list picker, so as an example, here on the right here where it says choose an app, whenever you have like a combo box that has more than five items, on the phone experience, you may have seen that when you tap on that, you actually navigate to a full view of those selections. That's what we call a list picker. And that's just kind of built into the control, so you don't have to worry about forcibly using that. You get that for free, but you can use it as well. Similarly, the date time picker has that same experience where it jumps to a new page. Okay, another question. Let's get to it. Omar asks, any chance that we can get a calendar page control with week view or week view-like animation behavior for WinRT? That is an excellent question and something that we are actively looking into. You can see, you know, some of the things that we've heard is that, you know, that we have the date picker experience, but when you have a scenario where you have like, hey, I want to book a vacation from to, and you kind of want to see that calendar view, you know, as you're picking those dates. That's one thing that we're looking at is, you know, what is that experience from a mobile, you know, one-handed user type experience, as well as I think what you're specifically getting at is similar to what the inbox phone calendar app has, is showing a, kind of a week agenda view. That is something that actually we're not investigating too deeply at the moment, but there's some third-party control vendors that absolutely provide that experience for you. So we're looking at the calendar view, like a calendar view, but not necessarily like a week agenda type view, a week or day agenda type view like the Inbox app has today, Inbox calendar app has today. Good question, Omar. Thank you. Keep the questions coming. We'll skip over the demo for theming and talk about motion. So one of the biggest requests we got for the Windows Phone platform was like, hey, there's a lot of cool animations that exist in the phone platform. Why can't we as developers use these animations? So good news, all the signature phone animations are now built into the platform and you can use those as developers. Some examples of these are the page navigations, which I'll show examples of. The tilt capability is now built in. Excuse me. Page rotations, the escalator, which is kind of how the context menu flied out, and then the reader board, and I have examples of these. Now these are implemented through what we call theme animations and theme transitions. This is the same API, again, that's on Windows, so again, part of our universal app platform experience. And the key animations have been updated to match the phone system user experience. So let's take a look at a couple of these. So this is kind of the code pattern for how you use theme transitions. So you have a UI element tree, and UI element has a transition collection. And within a transition collection, you can add one or more transitions. Now, while we expose the transitions, not every one of them will absolutely make sense to your experience. So a reader board animation on just a button probably isn't going to do anything but slow your app down. So, you know, don't do that. But, you know, a reader board on a list or a semantic zoom is exactly what it was designed for. Sorry. So here's an example. That where we have in a list view template, where we have that pattern, you can see that we're setting this in the list view template here, where I have the transition collection, and I'm adding actually two transitions, the add delete theme and the reorder theme. And let me play this video so you can see some of these in action here. So I have the list, and I've selected that one to reorder, and you can see how everything kind of moves out of the way, and the one that I've selected kind of move forward. And as I drop it and then commit that that placement, then the animation completes and will settle back into the list, and the elements come back in their rightful position. So this is the animation that you get for free when you add the reorder theme transition to a list and you enable the reordering capabilities. So just by adding that one line of code to your list, you can get that capability. And again, it matches the signature experience and the performance of the system characteristics. So some examples of when you would want to use page navigation theme transitions. So let's say we have page A and page B. The same transition will be used for both pages, and the transition is actually specified on the page you're navigating to. So the one specified on page B is going to be the animation used as we're navigating to that. And this is synchronized by the framework. And the same transition is used when you go forward and back navigation here. So let's say on page B, I say, hey, I want to do the slide navigation transition, which I use the same kind of code pattern except at the page level. And as I navigate to page A, I'll get that animation. And as I navigate from page B back, so I've hit the hardware back button, I'm also going to get that transition. So similar to the similar code pattern here, the navigation theme transitions are part of transition collections. These are applied at the page level through this navigation theme transition API, and there's a set of them here, and this is the basic code pattern. Let's take a look at a couple of these examples here. So on the left, we have basically the common navigation transition. So as it kind of, you know, you tap an item, it's just going to do that what we call the feather. I think we used to call it the feather animation, and so it just kind of navigates from page one to page two in a nice way. In the middle, we have the slide navigation. So let me play this one here. And as I tap something, you can see that the next page slid from the bottom up. And as I click back, it slid back down. So it kind of follows that same pattern. I'll do that again. This page slides up, and I hit the back button, and it's going to slide back down. The last one is the one that a lot of people wanted, was we call a continuum. So watch when I select a user's name from this particular list of users. The name is the part that's going to animate. So as I select Brittany's name, if you saw from the top, let's play that again. As I saw from the top, you saw Brittany's name kind of animate in from the top and take its resting position in the second page. And that's enabled by us specifying on that second page, like, hey, I want the continuum navigation transition. And as a part of that API, I can specify the UI element that is going to transition. So it literally doesn't take that same text box and animate it. But on page B, I have my UI laid out, and I say, hey, the player's name was this text block here. So I want to use the continuum navigation, and the element that is the continuum is this player's text box. And by just doing that as I navigate from the page, that automatically comes in and animates for you as you've seen here. Skipping over through some demos just so we can get through everything here, and then I'll show an all-up example here. A couple other controls that we've added is custom dialogues here. So if you just need just plain text with, you know, a yes/no button, you can use the standard dialogues for that. But let's say you want to show custom content, you want to add some login information, you want to add some, in this example, showing some album art, or you know, you just want to have some XAML content. So content dialog is the new API that allows you to put any arbitrary content within there and kind of create this app UI modal kind of view. It's not true modal, but UI modal kind of view here. And it supports both full and partial screen, and it actually kind of does some of this automatically, which I'll demonstrate in 1 second. The other thing that we've added is auto-suggest box. And auto-suggest box is basically that kind of auto-complete experience where by default, this is something that actually you have to provide. So, you know, we'll give you the capability to kind of hook up your data to, as the user types, you can kind of do a callback mechanism and populate this list of suggestions so that the user can select them. So we automatically position these things to maximize the space for the suggestions, and this is also fully retemplable, so you don't only have to provide textual suggestions as well. So let's take a look, pause and take a look and go back and show one of these examples here. And I just have a kind of a dumb app here, but we'll show it. And this is just a phone project. Blank, which I've just got showing the autocomplete capabilities and the dialogue. Let's take a look at the dialogue first. So I don't have a lot of content on this page here, and I'm actually not using a lot of input. So let's say I want to do this login control, and this is actually the dialogue here. Now you can see that it took up the full screen because it calculated based on the content that using partial screen was not going to be enough to be able to show everything in the dialogue. So it's going to use the full screen experience. If I click cancel, let's show that again. You can kind of see that animation. If you kind of look at it, this is part of that, we call that reader board animation, where it kind of pivots things in. But this is a dialogue. I can put any type of XAML content in here. One of the interesting things about the dialogues is we maintain consistency about where the dialogue commands are. So you can see that as I kind of tapped in these areas of the input controls and the software keyboard comes up, the buttons still stay close to where the user is going to interact with them, and they don't move up with the content there. So again, being very similar. This first one is a very simple autocomplete control. So I'm going to type in, it just has the days of the week. So as I look forward to Friday, I can type in Friday, and it auto-completes, and I can select this item, and it completes the element for me. If I want to do, type in S, you know, it filters everything that has the letter S in it. If I do SA, there's a Saturday, SU, et cetera. So you can kind of see that experience there. Now, how that's accomplished is very simple. So I kind of have hard-coded the days of the week here. Actually, not hard-coded. I'm just using the globalization APIs. And when the text changes on the auto-suggest box, so we're looking at this right here, that when the text changes on the auto-suggest box, we're basically querying to see, hey, you know, for each of the days in the week, does the day contain whatever the user's been typing, and then add those as the item source. I'm building up a list of results. Add those as the item source to the control. Now, let's say that's very nice for textual information, but let's say I have some product views, right? So I want to look at a product of something. You know, as I kind of enter some product information, I want it to kind of show like that preview experience. And let's go ahead and add a content template into here. And so in the auto-suggest box here, you can see that we have this API that allows you to specify an item template for the auto-suggest box. And then I put my data template in here, then I'm going to have a grid, and I'm going to have a color, and the title of the product, and the description of the product. So let's play this again, start the app again. And let's go back and look at the code real quick. So this is just a hard-coded list of products that presumably would come from a data source, allows you to kind of, there's some ID values here, product one, product description, and a color. So let's go on the second one here, and as I type product, you can see that I have a more customizable autocomplete list. So I can say, oh yes, product two is the one I want. And then I am responsible for, as that item is selected, I could have said, I could have populated this with the product name or the product ID or anything like that. Because I have a rich template, I now need to be responsible for telling the completed handler what I need to populate in that experience there. Okay, let's pause for another question here. Hisham has another question. Is there a way to use commands in MVVM for application bar icon button in Windows Phone 8.1? So I'm assuming just application bar button. But yes, so you should be able to use commands in the app bar button. The context, there's some nuances with how app bar itself is used, and so assuming that the data context is flowing from the page is probably not a good assumption. So you may actually have to do some element binding to get the data context or set the data context specifically. But yes, you should be able to bind to, the app bar button is just a subclass button with a custom style. So you should be able to bind commands there as well. All right, let's go back to our presentation here. Custom controls. Let's talk about custom controls for a second. I get this question a lot. Our job as a UI framework is hopefully to build enough building blocks that you can build a great app experience out of the box. We provide a default UI that matches the system experience with animations and behavior, et cetera. But there are times where you want to differentiate or in the case of the question about a calendar view where there just doesn't exist a control. So XAML is an extremely extensible object model that you can be able to create custom UI yourself. Now, this model has existed from WPF and Silverlight, and in WinRT, the model is exactly the same. So the control and content control are the two most popular base classes to derive from when creating a custom control. And it still uses the same mechanism of providing your own generic .xaml for the control in this convention pattern. So we look for custom control templates in themes/generic.xaml for your custom type. Now let me do a quick demo of this because it is a question I get a little bit. So let me do a demo of what this looks like and specifically how you might do this for a universal app platform as well. So I just created a file new blank universal project here. So I've got my Windows app, my Windows Phone app, and then the shared experience. Now let's say I want to create a custom control that has different UI for my phone experience and my desktop experience. Now right now there's not a templated control in the shared project. So as I say add new item, I don't really have that option. So here's my quick workaround for that. I'm going to go to one of the specific projects and say I want to add a new item and I want to add a templated control. So that's what we call a custom control. And so I call it my custom control. And this will automatically add the themes generic XAML and the class file. If we look at this, it derives from control. I'm going to make this a content control, so I'm just going to change that to content control. I'm going to do the same action here on the phone project. I'm going to call the class the same thing, my custom control. It kind of doesn't matter at this point. I'm just kind of showing you a quick workaround. And so let me just close that one. And the main reason why I did that is just to get the themes generic XAML in the project. I'm going to go ahead and delete the class file from the phone project and move the class file from the desktop project to be shared. So I actually want a common code base, but I want different UI for the control. So we're going to do this kind of quick and dirty here. So we made this a content control. So let's go ahead and do content presenter, and we will say content equals template binding to the content property. So we've made this a content control, so I'm just adding a content presenter here. And let's do some hard coding here. So let's do background is, let's see, where are we at? We're in the desktop one. We'll make the desktop one green. And as we go into the themes generic for the phone experience, we will make that, actually let's make this a completely different template. We won't even use a border. We'll use a stack panel, and we'll do some dumb stuff. We'll put a button in here that says hello, and then we'll put our content presenter with our template binding to the content property. Oops. And what the heck, let's put a crazy rectangle in here. Let's put a purple. Okay, so a completely stupid control template, but just something to demonstrate the point that on the phone we have a different template than we do on the desktop, but we also have the capability to have the same code here. And in fact, like, you know, we could have a template part here. And actually, let's go ahead and do that. Let's actually add an X name here, and we will call this initial button. And we'll get to that in 1 second. But now let's go into our app pages. So we're in our desktop app here, and we're going to use that control. So I'm going to go ahead and say local my custom control. Let's just center it on the screen so we can see it there. And I'm just going to do that way. And actually, we said we wanted content in here, right? So we'll do content foobar. So we've made a button to be our content for our control on the desktop. Now on the phone project, we're going to use that same control. Notice how I'm getting IntelliSense, even though it's in the shared project, I still get that. And right now, we're not going to do anything. We're not going to do anything on the phone. So we're just using the control on the phone, and we can use the exact same thing. So let's demonstrate that we can do the same code and make sure that the content still shows there. And so let's go ahead and run the desktop version, which is our green background with just showing whatever the content I put in it. So there we go. We got a green background, and then I put a button within this inside the green background. So you can still see the green background as I click on that. So very, very dumb control, but demonstrates that we got it working. Now let's change to the phone project and run that in the emulator. And the same code is going to run, but we have a different experience, right? So we had that stack panel that had the hello, that had the, this is our custom content here, and that had the purple rectangle. So we have our same code that actually was able to rendered two different UI, but used the same code things. Now, let's go back to the generic XAML for the phone version that we had. And remember, we did an X name on this button. Now, in controls, when you want to kind of get to these parts, so initial button is what we called it. Let's remember that. So now let's say I want to do something special in the phone environment with this button. So I want to override on apply template. So one of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to say I've got a button, and we'll just call it part button. And so on apply template, what I want to do is set that part button to, I want to get the element. So it was called initial button. So that allows me, now I have a reference to that actual button element there. And we will say as button. So now I have a reference to that button here. And I can do some things with it. So let's say I want to do, part button, content equals hello.netconf. And so if I were to run this, this is going to apply to both the desktop version and the phone version. But let's say I only want to do this in the phone version. So this is, let me start introducing some of the tooling capabilities we did for XAML and for the Universal App Platform. So now because I have a Universal App and I have a phone and desktop application, I want to say, I actually really only want this code to run if you're running in the context of the phone. So what I can do is I have this thing up here called the context switcher. So right now it's saying, hey, the context is the Windows project. If I change this to be the context as the phone project, then it will kind of drive the IntelliSense experience for me here. But one of the things I can do is I can just say, you know what? I want to ifdef this out and say, if Windows phone, I think we called it app. And you may say, well, where are these ifdefs coming from? So if we look at our application properties and build, we've done a couple conditional compile statements, both in all the default templates. So in phone, we've given you Windows phone app, and then on the desktop, we call it Windows app. So it allows you to have some kind of pre-built ifdef conditions. So I think I had this right. So you can see that this is lit up. If I change the context to say, what is the Windows project? Now this is grayed out saying, hey, this code's not going to run. So let's go ahead and run this in the desktop, change the startup, run this. So we should see no experience changes here. And if I run this in the emulator, you can see that I've changed that because now it's running under the phone context here. So that's an example of how one method you could use for custom controls. Let me show you one more thing that we did in the tooling here, and then I'll go back and review some questions in the slides. So as we go back to my Sports League app, let me run it real quick again. I talked about performance earlier, and we want to make sure that you guys have all the information you can to create a good performing app. So I'm going to go into my points view here. And I'm going to have my list view here, and you can see that I'm touching the list view, but nothing's scrolling. And it's like, huh, that's not a good experience. And now it's scrolling. That's good. Now it's not scrolling. So something's happening in my application, and I want to be able to diagnose that. So one of the things that we've added is some new performance and diagnostic tools in Visual Studio. And the unique thing that we've done in this release is we've added CPU and memory and UI responsiveness, but we've also added the capability to run these at the same time. So before, you could run them independently, and you kind of had to align the time slices to be able to kind of coalesce the information that you're getting. Now we can say, yeah, I want to see what's going on with the CPU and the responsiveness and start a debug session. Now, I already have a debug session saved from this same scenario here, so I can pull this up. And this is using the CPU and the UI responsiveness. And you can see, like, we give you a nice graph, we give you some XAML information for the hot elements. I can see, you know, hey, here's something that's going on, maybe I want to drill in and look at that information. But I can also see here, like in this chart here, wow, this is like the UI thread is pegged at 100%. So let me go take a chunk of this and see what's going on. Well, there's nothing going on in XAML, so that, you know, it's not a XAML problem. Let me go on CPU usage, and I can quickly see, oh wow, this function is the one that's causing my problem. And I can go back and drill into that code and correct that function. So using these new tools allows me to quickly drill in and diagnose these capabilities here. So let me go back to the slides here and talk a little bit about some of the tools. So specifically for XAML, what we've added is in the editor, we've improved the IntelliSense capabilities in both the binding experience, go-to definition. So when you have a static resource, if you hit F12 or right-click and say go to definition, it will take you to that definition. Whether or not it's in generic XAML or in your own code, it will take you there. Data binding will show the properties of the data context that you have. You can see here that, you know, I'm saying address dot, and I'm getting the experience there. Another thing that we've added is code snippets in XAML. So if you're a code snippets fan, you can create your own if you kind of do repeating things. One of my favorites is kind of surround with stack panel. Just, you know, for quick debugging things, I can just select a bunch of things and say surround with stack panel there. And then we do also now do start and end tag refactoring and better commenting support. So if you have nested comments within XAML. In the designer, we've added rulers and guides. So if you're coming from a design tool like Photoshop and you're used to kind of creating these snapping guidelines and rulers, those are now a part of the designer experience in Blend, where you can create these guides to kind of snap to a specific experience for your brand of your application. You can actually save these guides as files too, so these are kind of assets that can be checked in or shared amongst the company and put on a share. And we'll snap those, as you're working with the design surface, we snap to those areas there. Another popular one is in-place editing of templates. So when you're looking at a list and you kind of want to say, hey, I want to edit the item template of that list, you can edit the template in view of that item template rather than previously where you had to jump out to a data template view and you kind of lost context of how that list was editing. Now you can directly add it inline. And then the behaviors SDK I mentioned, is available for XAML developers. It's the same API for both Windows and Windows Phone apps, and you can use it. Supports managed and native apps, and is part of the part of the Converge platform. I mentioned the conditional and code editing experience. So, and the performance tools. And I'm out of time. So thank you. This is my contact information. If you have questions or wanted to drill in deeper on some of the things I talked about today, feel free to reach out. My inbox is always open. Happy to help our customers be successful and make new friends and see what apps, great apps people are building. So thanks for joining me today on this session for the .NET conference. Appreciate everyone joining online and participating in comments and look forward to seeing what apps you're building and have a great developer experience. Thanks a lot.